Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The idea is simple. If you're a contractor, protect covered defense information, or CDI. That might be on your own systems. In reality, for defense contractors, especially small businesses, that can be complicated and costly undertaking. It's the law now, and contractors have until the end of the year to comply. Joining me in studio with more, attorney Robert Metzger, a partner at Rogers Joseph O'Donnell. Bob, good to have you in.
Thank you.
What's going on here? This is a requirement for contractors to protect not the classified, but all the other information they might hold on their systems?
That's right. It concerns unclassified information. Over a period of years, the Department of Defense has experienced many examples of exfiltration or theft of controlled technical information. That is defined as information of military or space significance. And because of insufficient security at many suppliers to the Department of Defense, information, technical data that represents billions of dollars worth of investment has been stolen through economic espionage by nation-state rivals or even by business adversaries. And as a consequence, for 5 or 6 years, DOD has been intent on making its contractors do a better job to protect the confidentiality of this unclassified but sensitive technical information.
So the requirement is that the systems of the contractor should have controls in place according to a NIST special publication, I think 171. What does that basically require of them?
That's right. So we have a defense regulation, a DFARS. There are actually two. There's a 7018 clause that goes into solicitations. It's mandatory. And it requires a bidder to represent that it will be in compliance with this new NIST standard, SP-800-171. And then, if you take a contract, you get the 7012, or safeguarding clause. And it says that contractors must deliver adequate security at the point in time they take the contract, and that they are to be in compliance with this 171 standard by December 31st of this year. 171 is a standard that NIST developed specially, working with DOD and NARA, the National Archives and Records Administration. It was developed specially for non-federal information systems, that is, for commercial information systems. That's distinct from the domain where, you know, NIST usually works, which is to advise federal agencies and their contractors on how to protect federal information systems.
But you're writing here in Law 360 that even though, notwithstanding the fact that 171 is the kind of standard for this protection of unclassified data, some agencies, both in DOD and civilian, are asking for the higher level of protection that might be required or recommended by NIST. In 853, the well-known granddaddy of all of this for federal systems. So which is it? Is it 171 or is it the higher standard?
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, federal agencies are all subject to FISMA, the Federal Information Systems Modernization Act. And as federal agencies automate and move to the cloud, you know, they have become very well-schooled in how to apply NIST 853, which is essentially the security and privacy controls developed by NIST for federal agencies to use, both on their own information systems and on the systems of contractors who operate information systems by or on behalf of the federal government. So let's consider 853 and FISMA to apply to the envelope, if you will, of federal information systems. That is to be contrasted with contractor information systems where the federal government will share information that is federal information with a contractor, or where the federal government will pay a contractor to create information for the federal government. So the regime should be separated. If your job is to supply a product or deliver a service and you create or receive sensitive federal information to do so, you should be subject to 171. If you are under contract to manage or operate a federal information system as though you were a federal agency, then 853 applies. And 853 is much more rigorous, but it essentially builds upon the same families of security controls that we can see in 53 and that trace back to another document well known in this town, which is FIPS 200. FIPS 200, which was first written in about 2004, articulate 17 families of security controls. And those are the families that are then explained in lurid detail in 853 and at a level of high principle or objective in 171.
We're speaking with attorney Robert Metzger. He's a partner with Rogers Joseph O'Donnell. And so the 171 compliance of your system, not as operated on behalf of the government, but on behalf of your own company as a contractor, does that become a baseline requirement of all contracts, or does that become part of the requirements for each particular contract, which could make a difference in protest implication?
Well, right now, 171 is required only if you receive a solicitation, bid on it, and then take a contract that invokes 171. There's no overarching federal statute that says that private sector companies who do business with the government must satisfy any particular set of cyber controls. But DOD first, and increasingly civilian agencies, are adding provisions to their contracts which obligate bidders and suppliers to satisfy 171. Now, for some companies that are working in the federal space, they also have systems already, Tom, that are compliant with 853. And so a question that can come up is whether, if you are bidding on a contract subject to 171, you can take comfort that the measures already adopted for 53 are sufficient. And the answer in almost every circumstance would be yes, because 853 has both more safeguards and enhancements by number, significantly more rigor, process, and procedure. And typically, companies that have worked to an 853 requirement must go through some form of authorization to operate or assessment and accreditation by the federal government. So to distill all this to a simple proposition, if you have an information system as an enterprise that is built to 853 and which has received an authorization to operate, you can have very high confidence that the use of that system for a contract that's subject only to 171 will be sufficient and no additional measures will be necessary.
If the requirements state 171 and you bid on the basis of, hey, I've also got 53 and win, is that protestable by someone who had 171 and that's what the requirements asked for?
I don't believe that it would be protestable. But the issue or the question of what will be protested as concerned cyber requirements is really a work in progress, or hazards yet to be explored or endured. Right now we have a situation where DOD is imposing this new set of cyber requirements on all of its contractors. And today, the way that the contract clause is written is it makes the obligation for cybersecurity something that is to be performed by the contractor as distinct from the bidder. And so if you tried to protest the ability of a particular competitor to satisfy 171, most likely the GAO would say, well, this is a matter of contract administration because the compliance obligation affects the contractor, not the qualifications or the rating of the contractor in an evaluation. However, DOD has made it clear in some of its procedures and some of the guidance that it's made available to industry that it is likely to start to consider whether your cybersecurity is adequate as a condition of being eligible to receive an award. And DOD has said that it may start to evaluate and give scores to your cybersecurity. And in that situation where the adequacy of your controls or their relative or comparative merit, where those things figure into whether you can get a contract or whether you win the competition, well, we're likely to see some protests there because people will be excluded or win or lose depending on how someone in the government assesses their cybersecurity.
So it's wise for any contractor to keep upping their game in cyber because that's just the way the drift is headed.
Well, that's true for a number of reasons. Certainly, to be in the best position to win competition, you should have a strong cyber program. Also, DOD is extremely serious about the importance of protecting technical information that it gets from its contractors and that it shares with them. There's been great national injury because of poor cyber hygiene or inattention or lack of knowledge of the threat and ability to protect against it. But we now know that the threat is real, and we now know that the impact is serious. So DOD will expect everyone in the supply chain, large, middle, small contractors, to have good cybersecurity. And also, the regulations require anyone in the supply chain who suffers a cyber incident to promptly report the nature of that incident and its occurrence to DOD. And the reason isn't to go police or to sanction people who suffer a cyber incident, because it can and will happen to anyone. But the reason DOD wants that report first is so that it can assess the impact or damage to DOD capabilities and to the confidentiality of sensitive information. They want to know what was lost, what was compromised, who might have gotten it. And secondarily, they'd like information on how the attack was effectuated, so that if that lessons can be learned and shared with other contractors, we can have reduced vulnerability elsewhere.
Attorney Robert Metzger is with Rogers Joseph O'Donnell. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can read more, including how this DFARS clause applies to cloud providers, and find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Still to come on Federal News Radio, the Air Force cleaned up its data. Now it's saving hundreds of millions of dollars. It's the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.